I want us to get into this topic of pharmaceuticals and personal care products in the environment. As you can see, my name is Elijah Ngumba. I'm alumni of this institution, and currently I'm a lecturer in Jomo Kenyatta University of Agriculture and Technology, and we also do a lot of collaboration with this university. This is the line of study that I undertook when I was a student here, and we continue to do the same. So this one is frozen. Yeah. So this is the topic I did. And when we are talking about pharmaceuticals and personal care products, I decided to start with this slide here. This is a common slide adapted from Tennis, a paper that was written in the year 2000. And largely, this is what normally happens when pharmaceuticals are in the body, or when they're exiting the body. Once you take them, largely majority of the pharmaceuticals you pass through the body largely unchanged. And out of this work, we have had several articles that have been published, and these are some of them. You can, when you get the slides, you'll be able to go through the slides and look at what has been done in this line, especially by Tulatuk and his group and related publications. And these publications range from the occurrence and removal of these pharmaceuticals from urban hydrological cycles. But what are these pharmaceuticals and personal care products? And we can say that pharmaceuticals and personal care products are diverse groups of chemicals comprising of all human and veterinary drugs, diagnostic agents such as X-ray contrast media, nutraceuticals, bioactive food supplements, and other consumer chemicals such as fragrances, masks, sunscreens. All these compounds fall under that class of pharmaceuticals and personal care products. And currently, scientists are referring to them as emerging environmental contaminants. Not that they are new in the environment, but because their presence in the environment has started to elicit interest in the last 25 to 30 years. Previously, there were no analytical techniques which were capable of monitoring these contaminants in the environment. And their categorization can be as indicated. They can be pharmaceuticals or personal care products. Under the pharmaceuticals, and this is where I'll largely concentrate on, we have the prescription drugs or over-the-counter drugs. Prescription drugs, we have antibiotics, hormones, and any other kind of drugs. The other side, we have the personal care products such as the cosmetics, shampoos, detergents, and other category of compounds that can be categorized as personal care products. Why are these pharmaceuticals and personal care products unique? Why do we have interest in them? One, the traditional contaminants have similar chemical structures. However, when it comes to PPCPs, they vary widely in their molecular weight, structure, functionality, and shape. And in that case, it will be very difficult for us to come out with uniform methods to remove them from the environmental matrices because of these diverse physical chemical properties. Majority of them, especially the pharmaceuticals, they are polar in nature, ionizable in more than one group, lipophilic, and some of them are water soluble, meaning that they will not really be absorbed in the matrix, in the wastewater. They will largely stay in the aqueous phase. Then thirdly, most PPCPs are resistant to degradation. And as you heard in the earlier discussion, well, there was that case where Tula and Professor Rachanja were trying to degrade pharmaceuticals in the wastewater from pharmaceutical companies using the activated sludge system, but eventually the activated sludge died. The PPCPs are resistant to degradation, highly persistent in aqueous medium, and potentially able to produce adverse effects in aquatic organisms and health. And this one I'll come back to it later. And fourthly, PPCPs are pseudo-persistent in aquatic environment due to their continuous release from discharges of treated and untreated water. When these pharmaceuticals are consumed, they'll be continuously excreted by different people within the municipalities or within the that environment. Some of them may not have very long half-lives, but being pseudo-persistent, meaning that they are continuously being discharged into the environment, makes it them more kind of unique kind of compounds. And some pharmaceuticals such as erythromycin and the rest and can exist in the environment more than a year, much as they are pseudo-persistent. Again, there are some pharmaceuticals that can stay in the environment for more than 1 year. And as you know, as we saw in the first picture, pharmaceuticals, after their administration, they can sometimes be excreted without being transformed. They are excreted in their parent form. Some may undergo slight metabolism to certain extents, and which in some of their functional group, they may undergo oxidation, reduction, hydrolysis, or alkylation, or we may have a very simple, what we call glucuronide formation or sulfate conjugates, which adds into the pharmaceutical itself. If you look at the next box there where we have the paracetamol, we have the glucuronide formation. And once the glucuronide forms, when it gets, the pharmaceutical gets to the environment, such as in the wastewater, the glucuronide link may cleave and the pharmaceutical reverts to the original parent molecule and becomes active again. So this makes majority of pharmaceuticals quite unique in nature. And when we are talking about the excretion, we know that, and based on an article that we published earlier, between 10 to 90% of the pharmaceuticals that we consume are excreted in an unchanged form. For example, if you look at a compound like ciprofloxacin, when you take 100% of the compound, you go to the toilet, you excrete 80% of that ciprofloxacin in its original parent form. Some of us who have taken a compound like amoxicillin knows what happens when we go to the toilet. Immediately after one or two days, you feel the smell of the excreta smells amoxicillin, meaning that you are just releasing the same amoxicillin that you took in. That means as the population takes the pharmaceuticals, we become moving hotspots of environmental contamination for pharmaceuticals. You look at a compound like tetracycline, it is excreted 80 to 90% in its original form, but of course we have several other compounds like nevirapine, which undergo a lot of metabolism, and you get only 2.7% being excreted in its parent form. However, Much as we are talking about 2% of that compound being excreted in its parent form, the other percentage may be excreted in only slightly transformed compound, what we have referred to as either glucuronide formation or sulfate formation. The most ideal situation is where you have oxidation, reduction, hydrolysis, alkylation taking place so that your compound is significantly changed from its original form in a way that it becomes inactive. Well, what are the sources of these pharmaceuticals in the environment? And here we are saying that pharmaceutical residues can enter the environment in all the stages of their life cycle. That is during production, consumption, and disposal. And I would like us to ask ourselves, when we take pharmaceutical compounds and we remain with a few milliliters of that pharmaceutical compound, if it's a syrup, how do we handle that syrup? Where do we take it? Or you have these expired drugs, how do you handle them in your home?
In here, you take them to the pharmacy, or you're supposed to take them into the pharmacy, mm-hmm. but some people just put them into the toilets or a switch.
Some people just put them into the toilet. So when you put them into the toilet, where do they end up in? They'll end up in a wastewater treatment plant. And as you see in a moment, wastewater treatment plants are some of the poorest systems for removal of pharmaceuticals in the environment. Let's hear in China. How do you handle drugs that you're no longer consuming? Expired drugs in your home or syrup that remains?
Someone will buy the
abandoned medicines. I don't know why they use these medicines. It's a take back. You take back to the pharmacy. In India, let's hear, because we have diverse populations here.
It depends on the quantity of medicine you have the expiry date. Uh-huh. When you have a large amount of portions, mm-hmm. they will give back a new medicine. Mm-hmm. If it is at a small amount, stop it.
You put them in the garbage and forget. What about in
Spain?
Back to the pharmacy. Everybody obeys that?
I don't
think so. Yeah, probably somebody from Germany.
Was that?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So you're supposed to put it in one type of rice, I'm not sure what it's called in English.
Mm-hmm.
That it was burned.
Mm-hmm. Incineration?
Yes.
Dangerous wastes, hazardous wastes, then it will be taken for incineration.
I think the process goes on with the same. Everybody, all country, almost end up taking it either at the clinic or the drugstore or the health ministry, you know, something like that. Because in my presence, my country, sometimes I have tea can come in. We call it inspectors, come and see all medicines expiring, you know, make sure that medicines are expiring, come back to the ministry. We don't know what we care. So the process involved there, I think we have special people who have knowledge of that.
It is better said, yes, that's true. That's the most ideal situation. But in practical, most of the people will put those ones and flush in the toilet or in the dustbin and take it with the municipal waste. Pharmaceuticals, sources and pathways. For human use, you have the domestic consumption. You can have some excretion. They will end up you can have some direct discharge, get into the wastewater, surface water. It will go to the drinking water treatment. It may end up in the domestic water if it's not properly, the water is not properly treated. In some instances, for those who are using septic tanks and for institutions where we have soil separations, we can have the pharmaceuticals getting into the groundwater if it's in a soak pit. I remember in one of the areas that we are doing some study, they had a soak pit, and next to the soak pit, groundwater source, and in the groundwater, we had significant concentration of pharmaceuticals after the pharmaceuticals leach into the water. And this may end up getting back into the domestic water, and they are consumed. Sometimes in the most ideal situation, we have pharmaceuticals for human use getting consumed domestically, gets into the wastewater. Sometimes because of the inefficiencies of the wastewater treatment plant, they you get into the surface water, the drinking water, and they may be consumed by the end users of that water. In some industries, maybe also the source of these pharmaceuticals, they will go to the wastewater and may also end up getting into our water that we consume. We have pharmaceuticals that are utilized in agricultural activities. That is another source of pharmaceuticals in the environment. And these will largely come from discharge from animal farming, from the aquaculture. And once they can end up either in groundwater or surface water, depending on how the agricultural facility is dealing with its water. And if the treatment process is not comprehensive enough, we might end having those pharmaceuticals in the drinking water. So there are various parts that these pharmaceuticals can end up getting into the water and the pathways that they have, and all these may lead to some detrimental effects in the environment with regard to these pharmaceuticals. This is a continuation of the same. Why are we concerned about these pharmaceuticals in the environment? Why are we concerned? If you look at this picture down here, there's an animal you can see here called vulture. Can you see it there? There for a long time, India and Pakistan have been using diclofenac as one of the pain relieving compounds for their animals. And diclofenac is very toxic to vultures. So one of the things that happens when with regard to these pharmaceuticals, they will end up destroying the ecosystem by killing some of the sensitive animals, such as vultures in the case of India. We may have also a situation whereby if you have pharmaceuticals that are hormone-based, they may lead to what we call endocrine disruption, whereby the downstream of wastewater treatment plant, we have what we call feminization of fish, where the male fish will refuse to interact with the female fish, and there will be no reproduction in the downstream of majority of the wastewater treatment plants due to the feminization process, because the hormones that the human being use, the contraceptive that they use, they affect fish downstream of wastewater treatment plants if they are released into the environment. We have other sensitive animals that may be affected by high concentration of these compounds. And as Tula mentioned earlier, in one of the articles that I'll show you later, we looked at the risk assessment for these pharmaceuticals towards fish, Daphnia, and algae, and at some level of concentration, they become toxic and can lead to mortality of some of these aquatic animals. The major concern, we have the propagation of antimicrobial resistance, and this is a global concern whereby presence of antibiotics in the environment may lead to development of antibiotic resistance. And when the pharmaceuticals or when the antibiotics interact with environmental bacteria, there can be horizontal gene transfer, and the disease-causing bacteria can get a resistance, and in the process, it will be very hard for us to treat some of the common diseases with the common antibiotics. And in general, PPCPs, pharmaceuticals, are not regulated water pollutants. They are emerging contaminants. And as we'll mention later, it's only recently that many regulatory organizations have realize the impact of some of these compounds in the environment. Globally, because many countries' livelihood is improving, there's the aging populations, there's the growth of population, the rate of production of pharmaceuticals and their subsequent risk into the environment is expected to continue rising. So the number of pharmaceuticals that were getting discharged into the environment 10 years ago, right now we have more pharmaceuticals being discharged into the environment because people are now visiting the hospitals more. There is increased livelihood. The middle class is increasing. Places where we didn't have hospitals, we have hospitals. If you come to these developed countries, we have people who are very old and always on medicine, meaning that the amount of pharmaceuticals that are getting discharged into the environment is not going to get low anytime soon. Then in connection with this, the wastewater treatment facilities that we have are not expanding in the same manner. We have increased rate of production of pharmaceuticals and decreased rate of water treatment, meaning that we are continuously increasing the amount of pharmaceuticals in the environment as time goes by. And it becomes a time bomb because when we are releasing a lot of antibiotics into the environment, there's a very high likelihood of propagation of antibiotic resistance, and you know what is happening globally right now. It is a major threat to the global health. And we have said, this one I have already mentioned about it, the municipal wastewater treatment plants that we have do not effectively remove pharmaceuticals, since most of these compounds cannot be metabolized by organisms such as, and they cannot be source of carbon and may even inhibit the activities of the microorganisms. Pharmaceuticals are toxic in nature. So the bacteria that we have in wastewater treatment plant may be inhibited and its activity reduced by presence of those pharmaceuticals, meaning that instead of the wastewater performing better because of the presence of pharmaceuticals, because from the bacteria will use the organic compounds as a source of carbon, a source of food. Once the activity is inhibited, the microorganisms are killed, the wastewater treatment plants are not even able to effectively remove other compounds other than the pharmaceuticals that we are talking about. And in that case, the municipal wastewater treatment plants are not the primary barriers for contamination of pharmaceuticals, are not very good primary barriers for contamination, against contamination of pharmaceuticals in the environment. And what are some of the effects of these pharmaceuticals in the environment? Once the pharmaceutical gets to the environment, one thing that may happen is that the pharmaceutical may undergo biological transformation. This transformation as a result of interaction of the compounds with the microorganisms, and some microorganisms will degrade pharmaceuticals, others will be affected, activity will be affected by the pharmaceuticals. The other is the abiotic degradation, where we may have photolysis or hydrolysis. Photolysis is where, if the compound is sensitive to light, it will undergo some photolysis. If it can undergo, if it has functional groups that can undergo hydrolysis, it can undergo hydrolysis as we saw in a previous slide. The other thing that may happen is that those, the pharmaceuticals may interact with the solids in the environment, where they get soaked into the matrix, either in the water, solids in the water matrix, and the sorption into these solid matrices may hinder biotransformation of pharmaceuticals due to their reduced bioavailability. However, sorption into solid materials such as activated carbon is one of the methods that we use to remove pharmaceuticals and personal care products from aqueous environmental matrix. The other thing that may happen to pharmaceuticals and personal care products is volatilization. If your pharmaceutical is volatile, it may be volatilized and get into the environment, especially for compounds such as the inhaling compounds. They may be volatilized if their vapor pressure is quite low. That is a brief introduction into the aspect of pharmaceuticals in the environment. Where do they come from, and their fit into the environment? The next, I want us to briefly look at the global occurrence of pharmaceuticals. Here we have a map showing where work that relates to pharmaceutical analysis has been undertaken. And if you look at this map, you should not confuse the deep red color as places where we have very high concentration of pharmaceuticals. This is a map just showing where detections have been made for pharmaceuticals in the environment. We have areas where we have the gray areas where no work has been done with relate to occurrence of pharmaceuticals in the environment. And the reason as to why we have all these gray areas is because the instrumentation required for determination of these pharmaceuticals in the environment is quite expensive. And most of these countries may not have that expertise or instrument for analysis of these pharmaceuticals. But if you look at the developed world, the Americas and the Canada, Asia, Australia, and Europe, and also partly in Russia, we have significant amount of data available with regard to the distribution of pharmaceuticals in their environments. In Kenya, for example, if you look at the East African region, it's only in Kenya by this year, by 2016, when we had some data that relates to the distribution and occurrence of pharmaceuticals in the environment. Lately, we have had data coming from Zambia. We have produced data from Zambia, and we were the first people to produce that data from Zambia. We have also some data from Uganda and Tanzania, but those are data sets that have come up in the last 5 years or so. So largely, globally, there's not much information with regard to distribution of pharmaceuticals in the environment, and a lot needs to be done so that these compounds are well monitored and their occurrence is well documented. And here I also want to present part of what we found out when we analyzed some of these pharmaceuticals in the environment. And as we mentioned earlier, most active pharmaceutical ingredients administered to humans and animals will be excreted with the urine as a pharmacological active substance, meaning once it gets into the environment, it can be used to treat the environment if the environment is sick. Are we together there? It can be used to treat. Unfortunately, the environment does not require the active pharmaceutical ingredient. Instead of treating the environment, it destroys the environment. And currently, it is accepted that the main source of these pharmaceuticals in the environment are largely wastewater treatment plant effluents, where we have these wastewater treatment plants. And in areas where we don't have wastewater treatment plants, the source will largely be direct discharge of waters from the toilets. I know this table may not be very visible to everybody, but as you can see, what is in red is largely the works that we have done. And what is in black are the works that have been reported by others in the literature. And we have largely looked at concentration of these compounds, especially antibiotics and antiretroviral drugs, in the surface water, in wastewater effluents, and wastewater effluents. And as you can see, the concentration in developed world are much lower than concentration in the developing world. And for most of the compounds that we looked at for the developed world, the concentration are close to limit of quantification, whereas the concentration in the developing world are quite high. I want to put it in a pictorial view, the kind of work that we have done and the sampling areas that we have taken our samples. When I was here, we did analysis of waters from uvascular wastewater treatment plant, and we looked at the surface water, wastewater influence, and wastewater effluents. Then we did work in Nairobi, Kenya, and we look at the surface water, wastewater effluent from municipality wastewater treatment plants, and also in Lusaka, Zambia. This is where we did much more expansive work, where we looked at the concentration in groundwater, concentration in surface water, wastewater effluents, wastewater effluents, and source separated urine. The presentation that we had earlier from Sari talked about concentration of pharmaceuticals in source separated urine, such as what they had in Edranta in Tampere. And the findings that we had are that in Lusaka and Nairobi, we had very high concentration of antibiotics and antiretroviral drugs. These 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, those are antibiotic drugs, and the other three are antiretroviral drugs. And this was as a result of high disease prevalence and poor performance or waste stabilization pods, because in both Lusaka and Nairobi, the wastewater technology that are used, wastewater treatment technologies that are used, are waste stabilization pods, and waste stabilization pods are not very efficient in removal of pharmaceuticals from the environment. In Uvascular, we had relatively lower concentrations, based largely because of the lower population density, high dilution factors, and efficient wastewater collection and treatment processes. These are occurrences in the wastewater. And if you look at this, in Nairobi and Lusaka, the concentration were up to around 54,000 nanograms per liter, whereas the maximum concentration in Uvascular was around 540 nanograms per liter. So the concentration in Nairobi and Lusaka were several orders of magnitudes higher compared to the Uvascular wastewater treatment plant. One thing that you should know about Lusaka and Nairobi, there's usually high prevalence of HIV and AIDS, and there are several thousands of people who are continuously taking daily doses of the antiretroviral drugs and the antibiotics, especially sulfamethoxazole and trimethoprim, on a daily basis so that they can suppress the viral load and prevent themselves from getting infections. However, in Uvascular, we have lower levels of those prevalences. If you look at the surface water, the concentration in Lusaka were higher than even in Nairobi. And in surface water, the maximum concentration in Uvascular for the selected pharmaceuticals were up to 54 nanograms per liter. And in Lusaka, lamivudine, which is an antiretroviral drug, when it is excreted in its parent form, ends up in the surface water, and it may not undergo a lot of transformation. And in essence, the detection frequency was very high. Almost 100% of the samples that were taken for surface water had lamivudine as one of the compounds that was detected. And this is as a result of the high prevalence of HIV and AIDS in the neighborhood of Chuka region. And Nairobi, the concentrations were still relatively higher compared to Uvascular, because if you look at the concentration that we found out in Nairobi, there were up to 12,900 nanograms per liter. And if you look at what we have in Chunga, they're about 55,000 nanograms per liter for lamivudine. 3TC is lamivudine. The other environmental matrix that we looked at is the surface water. And I know Sari may know this place.
Madiba.
Mm. Yes, it's a familiar place. And the occurrence in surface water were quite sporadic. Still, some groundwater sources had the measured compounds. And if you look at the detection frequency, we took 26 samples. And out of that, for trimethoprim, we had 34.6% of those samples having detectable limits of trimethoprim, TMP. We also had 19.2% detection for ciprofloxacin, and the rest are as indicated. The highest was the compound called amoxicillin. We had a concentration of about 800 nanograms per liter in the surface water that was detected. But this one you can easily justify based on the proximity of peatland drains to shallow water wells, because the wells are not deep. They're about 2-3 meters. And the soil is largely sandy in nature. So
porous,
very porous in nature. So there's a lot of exchange between the peat latrine and the groundwater. So, and I also imagine that the E. coli for this kind of well should be significantly high.
Actually, the area is so, the groundwater level is so high that during the rain season, there's like water all over. So groundwater and surface water is like mixing up.
Mixing up.
Yeah.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Yeah, thank you for that clarification. So there's a lot of exchange of matter between the peat latrines and the shallow water wells. And this may largely contribute to the high concentration of the pharmaceuticals in the shallow water wells. However, if the boreholes are used, the deep boreholes, we may have limited amounts of pharmaceuticals getting into the groundwater. The good thing is with pharmaceuticals, majority of them are polar, so they largely adhere to the soil and may not be transported very far. If the shallow water wells are far from the peat latrines, we may not have them getting into the shallow water wells. This is the area that I know Sari is very much interested in when it comes to the occurrence of these pharmaceuticals in salt separated urine. This is the urine that Sari uses for irrigation, for fertilization of crops. Unfortunately for Lusaka, because of the high prevalence of diseases, the concentrations were very high for these compounds in the salt separated urine. Not in nanograms per liter, the concentrations were up to milligrams per liter scale. However, as it was mentioned in the typical garden, it is possible to do other agricultural activities other than production of food crops in areas where we have very high concentration of these compounds in soil-separated urine. Instead of planting food crops, one can plant crops that can be able to generate some energy, and in the process, you remediate these pharmaceuticals from the soil-separated urine. And this is also another key point, that because the concentration of these pharmaceuticals are largely, the bulk of the pharmaceuticals are largely in the urine, it is possible now to look at the intervention measure, separate the urine and treat the urine differently from the fecal matter, and you end up creating a barrier for environmental contamination by these pharmaceuticals. That's why soil separation is quite ideal in mitigating against the discharge of these pharmaceuticals in the environment. And as I have mentioned here, the concentration of these pharmaceuticals were 2 to 4 orders of magnitudes higher than in the surface water. That means the urine, if it's discharged into the environment, it will be diluted by these magnitudes. 2 × 10^2 100 times. 10^4 is 10,000 times. The urine will be diluted more than 10,000 times when it gets into the environment. Then once you go to the wastewater, you will now want also to condense that concentration to a lower part that can easily be treated. So source separation is one of the methods that can be used in prevention of these pharmaceuticals from getting into the environment. Are we together? Yes. Or in, anybody
I,
sleeping?
I am thinking in the transport urine or waste that you want that polarize the water, so the concentrations of antibiotics is quite
so,
high.
Sorry?
If you polarize the water
mm-hmm.
that you have in your in the urine,
mm-hmm.
so you are increasing the concentration of antibiotics. We are using in agriculture process if we want to reduce the amount of water in urine, then we are increasing the concentration of antibiotics. Yes, you increase the concentration of antibiotics or the concentration of the pharmaceuticals
by evaporation, and this is where very careful consideration should be made in taking urine as a fertilizer in some of these regions. You have to be a bit careful and do the risk assessment, as has been done by one of the articles done by Kairigo, the risk assessment that relates to these compounds in the environment. And this is what actually the next slide, risk of evolution of antibiotic resistance. Now, with this very high concentration of pharmaceuticals in the environment, not only in this region, but in other gray regions where we saw no work has been done, is there any risk that can lead to development of antibiotic resistance? And this RS means resistance selection, that if the concentration is above the predicted no effect concentration, you can be able to calculate the risk based on your measured environmental concentration and see what is the probability of antibiotic resistance forming in the environmental medium that you're looking at those concentration. And selection of antibiotic and microbial resistance occur in the environment when the microbial organisms are exposed to antimicrobials in sublethal doses, and the ratio between measured environmental concentration and the predicted no effect concentration for resistance selection gives us an idea of how extreme the situation is in that environmental compartment. If the risk quotient is greater or equal to 1, it represents high risk. If it's between 1 and 0.1, it's medium risk. And if it's less than 0.1, it means there is low risk. For the compounds that we have analyzed in those three hydrological cycles, you can see this compound here, like ciprofloxacin in Kenya, the risk quotient is 40, meaning that there is 40 times chances and likelihood that the resistance for ciprofloxacin will occur in that environmental compartment. And for a majority of the compounds measured in Kenya and in Lusaka, the risk quotients were significantly high for antibiotic resistance. And for this, we need to look at how can we now prevent the antibiotic resistance from occurring in the environment? What are the control options that will allow us not to propagate antibiotic resistance in the environment? And also toxicity related to these compounds if the concentrations are high enough for the aquatic environment. And the way we handle it here in Finland is not the same way we can handle that in India and in Kenya and in other environments. We need to look at what are the available resources, what is the local situation with regard to access to sanitation. If you're working with areas where we don't have centralized wastewater treatment plant, how do you handle the situation there? Yesterday, Tula was talking about flying toilets. If people are using flying toilets, are we going to talk about post-treatment technologies in areas where we have flying toilets? Those are considerations to make. Then, if you have some centralized wastewater treatment plants like here in your vascular, how effective is that? Is the collection and conveyance? How many people are able to access, and how much is it? Are we able to collect and convey into the treatment plant? Is the wastewater treatment plant conventional or non-conventional? Like the waste stabilization pods that we saw in Lusaka and Nairobi, we may not be able to undertake any form of post-treatment processes. But here in Uvascular, where we have the activated site system, it's possible to have a post-treatment technology where you can use advanced oxidation processes, UV treatment, reverse osmosis, and all other processes for post-treatment technologies and removal of these pharmaceuticals. So as we look at these control options, you should think about the kind of wastewater treatment plants you're having and the kind of economic environment you are dealing with. And most conventional municipal wastewater treatment plants are designed to remove the relatively easy biodegradable organic macropollutants, normally in the concentration of milligrams per liter, and also removal of microorganisms. The treatment plants that we have are not designed for removal of the micropollutants. They are largely designed for removal of the macropollutants. So largely, that's why a number of pharmaceuticals will pass through the wastewater treatment plant and they are not removed. Actually, a compound like carbamazepine, the inferent concentration and the efferent concentration, the efferent concentration are usually higher than the inferent concentration. Not that the wastewater is manufacturing the carbamazepine. Some carbamazepine will exit the body in form of a glucuronide. Once it's in the wastewater treatment plant, the environment is so good for the carbamazepine and the glucuronide will cleave. It will revert back to the original compound. So measurement of concentration for the inferent and the efferent may seem to have higher concentration of the pharmaceutical. So the design of these conventional municipal waste treatment plant are not for these compounds. So something needs to be done so that these plants can be able to remove the compounds. And with the typical low hydraulic retention times in these wastewater treatment plants, then, and the slow degradation process with regard to the relatively poorer compounds such as the APIs, then there's very limited microbial degradation that will happen in the wastewater treatment plants with regard to this removal of this compound. However, hence, you have to look at some other approaches to remove these compounds from the environment or from the wastewater. One of them is optimization of existing treatment technologies. Look at how well your system is removing the pharmaceuticals. Can you be able to improve that and increase the amount of this compound removal from that wastewater? For example, increasing the hydraulic retention time. If you increase the hydraulic retention time, you may increase the amount of pharmaceuticals that are removed. However, the success of this one is limited. You can only change by very small percentage points, removal by very small percentage point. Secondly, is upgrading the existing treatment plants with new end-of-pipe technologies so that you work with the activated sludge system, but at the end of the pipe, you add some other technologies that will be directed towards removal of pharmaceuticals and personal care products. And I know there are many wastewater treatment plants in Switzerland, Professor Sula, that have here in Finland. Do you have them? Do you have any here in Finland?
Not yet. No. Some in Sweden, they are considering
You upgrade the existing end of pipe technology, very expensive, very labor intensive, or come to Saris solution. Source separation and source control measures. Separate and treat the small volumes rather than put everything together and try to have end of pipe technologies that will not be beneficial and will be very high energy intensive. We say soil separation and soil control measures because some of the behaviors that we have, as I asked in the originally, how do you handle drugs, remaining drugs or expired drugs? If you handle them properly, that is a form of soil control measure. If already the drugs are consumed, you may do soil separation of urine and fecal matter. And as I mentioned earlier, because pharmaceuticals are largely polar, the separation medium in the body will be in the kidneys, and most of the waste that relates to pharmaceuticals will go to the urine. So if you're able to catch the urine, contain the urine, the fecal matter will have very limited amounts of pharmaceuticals. The strategies, monitoring strategies, we have the European Union Water Framework Directive, which has added several pharmaceuticals into what we call the watch list, pharmaceuticals that are anticipated to pose danger into the environment. Previously, we had only the hormones and diclofenac. Right now, we have had pharmaceuticals such as sulfamethoxazole, ciprofloxacin being added into the watch list. You can look at the watch list that came in 2022, a few weeks ago. It has a number of pharmaceuticals that all European countries need to continuously monitor, then evaluate them in a period of, I think, 4 years for a decision to be made with regard to whether to flag them or they can remove them from the watch list if they pose no danger into the environment. But of course, right now we have more antibiotics in the watch list because of the persistent nature of some of these antibiotics. Remember, I mentioned in an earlier slide, a compound like sulfamethoxazole has very long lifetime in the environment, making it a very good candidate in the watch list because of its long half-lives. Here I'll not say much because the experts are here. We have said ecological sanitation is one of the means that can be used to control these pharmaceuticals in the environment, other than the aid of pipe technologies. And as you can see here, the urine makes less than 1% of the wastewater and contains majority of the plant nutrients, and also pharmaceuticals are still there. On average, 88% nitrogen, 67% phosphorus, 73% potassium, 64% of active pharmaceutical ingredients on average are contained in the urine. And because majority of these pharmaceuticals are excreted via the kidneys, so targeted treatment that target the treatment of urine can prevent them from getting into the environment. So this is will be like hitting two birds with one stone, that you are advocating for ecological sanitation, you are recovering nutrients, but also you are avoiding the very expensive aid of pipe technologies that may be required for implementation in wastewater treatment plants. And if you are talking about this ecological sanitation, that such as the dry toilets, this waterless sanitation will allow for efficient nutrient recycling, avoiding the high cost of synthetic fertilizers, as you have heard in the previous presentation. Previously, and this was mentioned yesterday by Kairigo, World Health Organization has recommended the storage of urine for 6 months before utilization in agriculture. However, this does not significantly reduce the pharmaceuticals. Majority of the pharmaceuticals remains. It will remove the microbial, they will die, but the pharmaceuticals will remain intact. And this is a study that was done by Sana. That time was Sana Punonen in 2013, 2014 there. And one of the articles says that these pharmaceuticals, even after the storage of the urine, they remain intact in the urine. So as you plan to utilize the urine, if the concentration are so high, then you need to use the urine in areas where you may not lead to formation of antibiotic resistance. And in summary, we are talking about human being consuming pharmaceuticals. We discourage about direct disposal. This is a picture that you saw yesterday. If you have decentralized sanitation or ecological sanitation, it's possible to have targeted treatment of excreta. And after the targeted treatment of the excreta, you can have disposal and nutrient recycling. In the centralized sanitation system, we can have non-conventional wastewater treatment plants. And in the non-conventional wastewater treatment plants, the removal of pharmaceuticals, just as in the conventional wastewater treatment plants, is not efficient. So the discharge that is coming from the non-conventional wastewater treatment plant, we have significant amount of pharmaceuticals. And the most ideal when it comes to centralized system is where we are having conventional wastewater treatment plants. And after the conventional wastewater treatment plants, we have post-treatment technologies before the discharge, and utilization of the waste post-treatment technologies will allow for efficient degradation of pharmaceuticals and personal care products and avoid aspects to do with environmental antibiotic resistance and other issues that are related to presence of pharmaceuticals in the environment. I think I want to stop there.